Excited to welcome Chaminade College Prep head coach Frank Bennett to the basketball podcast. Frank Bennett has established himself as one of Missouri's premier high school basketball coaches, leading Chaminade College Prep to sustained excellence in the state's top class. Since taking over the program in 2013, Bennett has guided the Red Devils to a Missouri state championship, two state runner-up finishes, eight Final Four appearances, multiple Metro Catholic titles, and several district championships. His leadership has produced a remarkable career record of 248 wins against just 72 losses. Bennett has coached and developed some of the most significant basketball talents to come out of Missouri, including Jason Tatum, Bradley Beal, Tyler Cook, and David Lee. Bennett's impact extends beyond Chaminade. He has served as a head coach for USA Basketball at the 2025 Nike Hoop Summit, leading the USA men's team against the world team.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Frank, welcome to the basketball podcast.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thank you for having me, man.
Great for me. I got a chance to know you through USAB and different training camps and had a chance to see you work in various places as well. So it's going to be a fun podcast, but let's start maybe. You've been doing this for a while. You've coached at all the levels you can coach at. And what, in your perspective, has stayed the same and what's changed in terms of the high school landscape?
The thing that's changed is obviously kids are getting paid and there's more options to them at the high school level. And there's more pathways to the end goal for them, which is obviously the NBA. So with the increase in pathways, the things that have, that's obviously the biggest thing that's changed. But for a guy like me that's coaching at the high school level, what's stayed the same is the fact that there are still kids out there that we can coach and move from our level to the next level. You just have to get a little bit more crafty with your approach. And so with that being said, you have to adapt and change and move with the times. You can't be backed into a corner and just do things just because it's the way you've been doing it in the past. You have to be flexible and you have to adapt with the times. And so for us, that's been making sure that we've used creative ways to embrace social media and presence on the digital side of things to make sure we're forward thinking and putting our athletes in the best possible position, because college coaches are still looking for guys. College coaches are still looking for hardworking, coachable guys that can help them win now. And so we take that approach and we try and apply that to our guys.
It's a great answer, coach. It's exciting times to be a high school coach. There's always challenges, no doubt. So it's never boring. One thing I got a chance and I wanted to talk about and deep dive with you is inbound, and especially baseline inbound, and talk a little bit about from install to counters to play calling, because like in really short times when I've seen you install it, it's been really effective and your players seem to enjoy the end result. So maybe just start with your general inbound, especially baseline inbound philosophy.
Yeah, the things that I think about is being sure with the basketball, right? So making sure that first the entry pass is one that is not as contested. The other piece to it is I like to stay in the same formation and run different things out of the same formation like everybody does to try and mask some of the actions and to make it harder to scout. And the third piece that really helped was the fact that in a lot of the camps that I've seen you at, Chris, like the Nike Elite 100 and whatnot, you don't have a lot of time to practice with the guys. So you need something that is short and quick and easy that you can toss in there and install that ultimately would. I've been fortunate to see you in different spaces. And one of the spaces that I've seen you is the Nike Elite 100 camp. And it's a fantastic camp with top players in the country. And they really put them through a comprehensive workout. And what I truly appreciate about it is the fact that you get to put your hands on kids that you know are good, but you don't know anything about them most of the time. And you're thrown right into a competitive setting to where you're trying to win a camp championship. And so that's fun. You don't have the time to install a lot of things. You don't have the time to prep. So a lot of it is coaching on the fly, which I love. And it helps me really funnel down to the essential things. And so one of those essentials is, what do you install on the baseline? And with that being said, with the fact that you don't have a lot of time, something simple, quick, and easy that the kids can pick up on, they can transition to quickly in the dead ball, and they can make instinctive reads is the genesis of this. And so one of the things that I like to, or some of the things that I try and pick up on are, can we keep the same alignment and run a multitude of options out of it? You can do that. Is there a safe way to get the ball in? Can you be sure with the inbound pass? That checks a box. And then if it's really good, can you run it versus both man and zone? And those are some of the things that you can leverage in some of the things that we that I try and install. And then on top of that, what's really important to me is the fact that you give them freedom responsibly, right? So it's not something to where you're choking the life out of it just because you're controlling every step out there, but you're giving them just enough structure to where they can make quick, decisive reads and be themselves. And camps like the Elite 100 fosters the birth of ideas like this.
And it seems that, not talking specifically just about that camp, but you're one of the few coaches there that even installed inbound, number
Yes.
one. A lot of coaches were starting from half court stuff and plays and different things. And to be honest, most of that never seemed to happen.
That's
But
right.
the inbound happened. And this is something I say to coaches all the time. Like from day one, my first practice with my youth teams, we're installing inbound because those are chances to be able to, again, take advantage of special situations. And certainly to your point, not turn it over. Which is
That's right.
the second part of that is to be able to try and score, obviously. But the first part is just get the ball inbound safely. So, talk to us about with your high school team, when do you install inbound? And then, what are some ways that you install it?
Yes, so great question. So we very similar to you. It's one of the first things that we install in large part because we like to do whole part whole and we like to get up and down as soon as possible. And so obviously when the ball goes out of bounds in the baseline, it's a great opportunity. Everybody's stressing paint touches, punctures. It's one of the times in the game that I think we get numb to it sometimes, but you get to start with the ball basically in the paint. And if you pay a little bit of attention to it, you can steal some quick and easy opportunities there. And so we try and hammer it early just because I think that it takes some time to stress the reads. It takes some time to go back and watch film and show what a correct read is versus an incorrect read is. And then we want to make sure that towards the end of the year, we're not having to coach plays and do all that stuff. Our players are making plays. And the teams that we've had that have been really good in those areas, they've been making plays. And it hasn't been me having my hands and my control all over them. And to your point, Chris, we like to start talking baselines early and often, just because at the end of the day, there are opportunities for us to get the ball in the paint. There are opportunities for us to get quick and easy baskets, especially early in the year, because you don't know what other teams have worked on. Some teams might just be, they'll sit in a 2-3 because they don't feel comfortable going man. We've got something against that. Or they might go man and their communication might be as crisp as it will be down the road. And so early on against really good teams, we might be able to steal some opportunities there.
I love that. And that obviously point about being able to install it early so that your players can be able to move away from the structure to be able to make decisions. And that's one
Yes.
of the early parts of this. And I know that's important to you as well, is it's one of the easiest early things to be able to emphasize the importance of decisions, isn't it?
That's right. And at the end of the day, when you talk about punching deep into the postseason and even zooming out a little bit and preparing high school basketball players for the collegiate level, I haven't met a college coach that is one that's, oh, okay, it's okay if he's a bad decision maker. No, they want guys that can make good decisions with the basketball. And so for us, if we can teach them how to use their freedom responsibly, i.e., make good decisions with the basketball, that makes us harder to scout in the long term. That makes our feet quicker because they're making quick, decisive actions. And then the ripple effect is also good because of the fact that their teammates then know how to play off of their decisions. And so not only does it help the individuals for us now, but it also helps our players for whenever they go play at the collegiate level, at whatever level they're able to do so, they can plug and play almost immediately because they make sound decisions with the basketball.
You emphasize that obviously you have a paint touch essentially, and we all
That's
emphasize
right.
that. So I love that, and I hope coaches connected with that. The other thing that you mentioned is breakdown. And I don't think a lot of people think about breaking down inbound. And I've always done it because I've always created small-sided games out of our
That's right.
inbound. But I'm curious then what your perspective is, because I think this is one of those things. We break down offense, we break down defense. Why are we not breaking down inbound, which is where you can again create a big advantage?
Yeah, and Chris, to your point, I found a lot of success, and I stole this from I'll give him credit, Scott Fitch at USA Basketball. He does something to where they'll break down a piece of the game right before water break, and it's not overbearing. It doesn't require a lot of bandwidth. But I saw that from him, and I apply it to our baseline. So where we'll do, if instead of having four guys out on the court, we'll do three in our alignment, and then we'll have them play out of a random setup, and then we'll talk about it, and then they'll get something to drink. And so the breakdown drill, or we'll go 5 on 5 and we'll start from baselines, or we'll go 4 on 4, start from baselines, and then we'll play out of it, especially early on when we're installing our offense. 4 on 4 from baselines is something that's really good, just because of the fact that, again, they've got more of the court, they can make the reads. And then if we don't get the action, we can emphasize some of our half court principles, racing the space, nailing down our spacing, and trying to make sure when we do get the basketball in, the ball doesn't die out, but still has energy behind it. It still pops, and then we're able to still try and get punctures and play out of it. Small-sided games, I know you hammer it on your channel. It truly is the way to go.
So you mentioned this and I was going to go there. So let's go there now. This concept of lag free. So you don't score on inbound, right? You get the ball in safely. So what happens next? Talk to us about what happens next.
Yeah, and so the most important thing for us is when we get the basketball in. I think it was a Majerus or a Don Nelson quote about spacing is offense and offense is spacing. So the minute we get the ball in bounds and we're trying to take advantage of the reads, if they blew up our advantage and we're neutral, then we have to make sure our spacing is established, and then we're going to the next action as quickly as possible. Typically, if we're in our continuity or our base offense, it's principle, right? So we're trying to touch sides and get to the next action as quickly as possible. And sometimes that's going straight into a ball screen, depending upon the location of the ball and the personnel. Oftentimes it's touching sides and then trying to stir up the weak side a little bit. But those are things that we're very intentional about discussing and repping out when we start discussing some of the small-sided games. We will be very dedicated to working on the inbound, the attack, then making sure it's seamless going from the baseline into our half court attack. What we don't want to lose sight of, or we don't want to lose, is any nuanced advantage that we get. We want to build it to the best possible shot for our school. And so oftentimes when you run a baseline, your advantage might come from the fact that if we're inbounding to a five, the five man typically is the laziest guy, and he's back in the paint. He's trying to disrupt some of the opportunities you have at the basket. So what greater opportunity is to get it to the five man and then try and quickly go into the action, because we can take advantage of the X5's laziness or X5's lack of responsiveness. And so those are some of the things that we try and communicate to our guys, that even though we ran our actions and we didn't get anything good out of it, the inbound can be an action in itself to where we can start the dominoes and try and create something good in the half court.
Love it. And you mentioned like the concept of hunting matchups. Are you hunting
Yes.
matchups specifically on your baseline inbound?
We are, and we teach it, and we're heavy on it. And that's stuff that when we go back to review film, we're really sensitive to those things, just because of the fact that if we can teach our guys about the matchups, if we don't have to verbalize it in the games and in competitive situations, then they can recognize it themselves. And then you almost see them take a life of them, play take a life of its own, to where you see a guy like look at a teammate and make contact, or you can just see that they're in sync and then start to play for each other instead of playing for a clipboard. You know what I mean? And so when they get to that space with talented kids and coachable kids, they're hard to guard, man. And so we're sensitive to those. We're sensitive to the matchups. And then, Chris, I hear you talk about this all the time. It's also a way to keep the game simple, right? So if you're playing and you got a big on little, we don't need to run much. So if the big is closing out to you and he can't guard you, keep the game simple. We don't need cone drills. We don't need in and out cross in between. No, rip away and get a paint touch and then make a read. We call it getting 21. If you rip away and get a paint touch and you don't make two guard one and you have an advantage, go score the basketball. If you have two guard one, that's what we call 21. Then get off the ball as quickly as possible, respace, and then let's get the best shot for our school. And to your point, the more fluent our guys are recognizing matchups and attacking them, the better off we typically are and the better shot we get.
Love that, the getting 21. Great phrasing for that. Easy phrasing for people to understand. Love that. Talk to us about the inbound passer. How do you choose who the inbound passer is? And then what are some of the keys that you give them in terms of their understanding? Because arguably, they're the most important person. Like the best inbound I've ever run is when I've had the best inbound passer.
That's right. And you know what? So I'll quote one of my college coaches, Steve Hesser at Drury University. He won a national championship. He's a passing game savant. So his motion offense, he was moving the basketball, passing, cut, and screening. And with baselines, his baseline out of bounds plays were uniquely simplistic. Like they were not complicated at all. And he just hammered the reads. But when it came to him emphasizing who passed the basketball in bounds, it wasn't some philosophical discussion. He would just look at you and say, "It's a person I trust the most." And it pushed back on years of like teaching and philosophy that I had been involved with. From I had a really good middle school coach. I actually have really good middle school coaches. I had a really good high school coach. I had a couple of really good college coaches. And so you have all these different philosophies from your point guard to your two, your three, your four, and just to have it upended by him saying it's a guy that you trust the most, that's what I've stuck towards. What's the guy that I trust the most? Just because when you think about it, that's the guy that not only is he processing the reads that the guys should make on the court, he's anticipating those reads, he's seeing the matchups. And he's doing all of this with an internal clock going on in his head to where he's the guy that has to get the ball in bounds. He's a guy that sometimes has to get the ball in bounds, come back to it. If it's a guy that can't make a play off the bounce, he's a guy that has to call the timeout if it's not materializing the way that we want it to happen. He's a guy that has to do all that stuff in a pressure-filled situation where we're down one or down two with a short clock, and he's got to make that read. So that guy has to be a wizard with the basketball per se, just because of the fact that he's got to evaluate all these different things at one time. So he's not somebody that, I guess he does have to have a skill set in being sure with the basketball, right? It helps if he can make a play with the basketball, because oftentimes once you get the basketball in, he's a lot of college basketball play. They'll clear out and he'll bring it right back to him for a two-man game on that side. So it helps if he's skilled in that regard. But they have to have some IQ in the sense they have to have a feel for the game, feel for the clock, and understand what the right decision is in that moment.
So, talk to us about counters. A key part of all offense is clearly being able to have coverage solutions and counters.
Yes.
And that seems to be, again, something that you value is like off this simple action, there's these many possibilities.
That's right. And I think it's with counters, what we like to do is we like to show them the counters as a whole, so they understand what the vocabulary is or what the options are at their disposal. And then as we progress forward, we will show them again through film and sometimes through live teaching when the reads were great, when the reads were wrong, when it was time for the counter, and when it wasn't time for the counter. For example, one of the things that we'll do is if we have a five man, he'll typically be a step off the elbow or above the elbow and in a slant action. And again, I wish I could draw this up for you, but essentially, if he's being guarded by one of those lazier fives and our five can step out and shoot it, the guy who's coming downhill off of the screen might loop around and screen his guy for him to pop and get a catch and shoot. And so those are some of the things that are counters to the way that they're playing you. Because if we burn them on a back cut to get something cheap, then the five man's probably going to sag off and take away the inbound or take away that back cut. If it's the inbounder that's sagging off to protect the basketball, then we talk about the counter to that. Then the five pops gets a catch. We space everybody out, and then we take advantage of the fact that the inbounder then has a long pursuit or a long closeout to get back to the basketball. And then it's a two-man game on that side. And with that being said, though, the thing is, what I've found to be extremely valuable over the course of time is being intentional about taking time to coach that side of the game. Just because it's really easy to box it up and run stuff and keep the control on the sideline with the clipboard with us. But if we empower our guys and we take a little bit of time to show them the reads and the nuances, again, it's all personnel driven, right? But if we have the personnel to do that, I've seen it really bodes well for us and helps us throughout the course of the season. It makes us look like geniuses when it's not the case. They're just playing the game the right way. And again, it keeps our feet fast, it keeps our decisions quick and accurate. And then when one person's decisions are quick and accurate, everybody else's decisions become quicker as well. So teaching the counters is invaluable for us.
That's a great example. Thank you for sharing that insight. And it's a structure from which decision making can appear, and that's what you allow for. There's no doubt. And you went into a little bit about play calling, and I hope coaches caught that part. It's like the difference between having a defender on the ball versus off the ball somewhat dictates what play you call initially, doesn't it?
That's right. And it's those observations that you observe through scouts, through obviously watching the opposition. But it doesn't have to wait until scouts. We have a coach at our school that takes pride in taking the second team, and he just messes with our first team. And I love it just because it just gives us, especially early in the season, it gives us so many different looks that when we go back and we watch film, we're able to go back and talk about those moments. Okay. Why was this play blown up? Or why did we not get this option? I don't know. And it's okay. Here's what I see as a coach. We see that this is how they're guarding you. And then we were robots out there. We didn't cut with a purpose. We didn't recognize that. So our play got blown up. So next time you see the guys go out there and then they understand that they're just not going out there and just waiting for the ref to hit on the basketball. They're going out and they're observing more and they're trying to pick up on some of the nuances from the other side. And then all of a sudden they're making plays with just a little bit of effort from us. And I feel like that's our job as coaches, was to make them, put them in position to be successful. But also, especially in a day like today where, so many of these kids they're so much more skilled than what like I was growing up. And they have all these trainers and they can do all these unique things with the basketball that sometimes the application is what's lost. And so I think that's an opportunity for us, going earlier to what I was saying earlier, as far as like the opportunity for a high school coach, we can help them leverage the application side because that's what I feel is lacking. Because Chris, this could be another podcast, right? About the having the OGs or the vets that would coach you up in open gyms, and if you didn't play right, you were never picked up and all that stuff. And so you learn how to apply finer things of the basketball just because you're around older guys. The kids, have they changed? No, yes and no, but I think that to their defense, it's our responsibility now to do what the OGs or the vets did for us, for them, and fill in that gap. And so we have to teach them how to apply what they learn and how to be students of the game. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, coach. I'm there with you. I think the role of the coach has changed, and I think a lot of coaches haven't changed. They just need more of the decision-making part, more of the understanding of the nuances of the game part, whether that's on the court or off the court, just how
That's
to
right.
act and how to be a teammate and how to be professional. Because, as you said, they're just not getting that because they're not consistently playing with the same players over and over again, and they're playing for multiple coaches, multiple trainers,
Yes.
multiple this. So, in your setting, it's so important to cover those nuances of that.
Hey, coach, a brief time out from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. Do you know which players should be taking what kind of shots? An analytics system like Hoopsalytics can help your team make better shot selection decisions. You can track every kind of shot each player takes, where the shots come from, rate the shot quality, track if the shot was contested, and see the results. For example, see which players are taking mid-range floaters and measure the results versus catch-and-shoot jumpers. As an added bonus, Hoopsalytics shot charts are fully interactive, so you can filter by shot distance, shot type, or even specific areas of the floor. Then watch video clips of all those shots or see the points per shot. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball today. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball today to learn more and start analyzing your game for free.
So maybe let's go there, coach. Give us some of the
Yes.
nuances, maybe, or some of the OG things that maybe you have to cover that in the past, maybe, again, a veteran would cover.
Yeah, so one of the things that we do that I'm a big believer in, again, it stems from my collegiate coach, Steve Hesser, is that we progressively build up to 5-on-5 every single day. And it's uncomfortable just because of the fact that, especially early in the season, sometimes you might not look as good as you hoped. If you run a ton of sets and if you have your hands all over the offense, I feel like teams like that typically look better early just because the coach has her hands on them early. And then for us, my thought process is this: if we can play more than the other team throughout a high school season, That means our players have effectively made more mistakes than the other team has made throughout the entire season. Now, if our job as a coaching staff, if we do our job and clean up and teach them how to fix those mistakes, then at the end of the year, they're better basketball players because at the end of the year, the other team, again, we're playing against all high coaches are playing against other really good coaches. So they're going to put in the time, they're going to put in the effort. If you run any type of sets, they're gonna get your play calls, they're gonna get your sets, they're gonna blow up all of that stuff. And so with that being said, at the end of the day, your guys are gonna have to make plays. And so what I've always done, I've done it for 11 years now, is I've really been married to the fact that I'm okay with the fact that we might lose some games, especially early, because it gives us valuable feedback in the sense that we can go back, watch film, and fix some of the things that ultimately become one of our advantages down the road. Some of those things come from, you said specifics. One of the thing is our the speed at which we read screens. So for example, if we set up, if someone's on the wing and he sets a pin down for a guy in the corner, and the guy who's defending the, we'll say the two is in the corner. So X2 goes underneath the screen. So the read is obviously that the two man pops, right? So if he pops early in the season, that pop might be slower because we're slower at reading that, making that read. The ripple effect to that is the screener. So the screener goes, sets the pin down. His read is wherever X2 goes, that's where he goes. That's where he second cuts. So then the screener early in the season might stand around and wait to screen the guy. And meanwhile, the guy in the corner is dancing because he doesn't know what the read is. If we do our job as coaches, then two in the corner, he pops, the second cutter cuts with pace, and that read is more decisive. And then another read is if he goes down and then as we screen, if the we'll say the guy on the wing is three. So if the guy on the ring is going to set the pin down and X3 is higher, it's an automatic slip, right? Early on, it's harder to teach those things just because there's so many different moving parts. But if we're consistent in what we're demanding, we're holding them accountable on the court and off the court through film and effective communication as a coaching staff, those reads get quicker. They get quicker as the season progresses. And so then what it looks like to the opposition, it looks like, oh, they don't run anything early on. Because in truth be told, we do. We're just not as good as we're going to be. And I'm okay with that. But then if you come and watch us later in the season or in the postseason, there's a reason why I feel like our guys are in better shape. They're making crisper reads and they're able to make better plays down the stretch is because our guys have made thousands of mistakes compared to another team's couple hundred mistakes. And so that allows us to teach deeper, that allows us to learn deeper, that allows us to give our guys deeper feedback that allows them to really maximize their abilities within the construct of our offense. And then they're not rattled when things get taken away. Okay, so you're playing a team that's aggressively up the line. We've seen that multiple times in practice. What happens if they pack it in? We've seen that multiple times in practice. What happens if they're top locking one of our best guys? We've seen that in practice. What happens if they're trying to push us hard to one sideline? We've seen that in practice. And so we've seen all of these different things that we can always go back to. And one of the things that, again, we have a few coaches on our staff that are really good about this. When we see those moments in games, those are hang-up moments for our season. A game where we weren't very good against pressure, we go back to that game constantly. So that's a bookmark in our players' minds where we've learned where we were was a failure point for us. And not to be verbose about this, I'm just really passionate about teaching our guys the game and not putting them in a box by running a ton of sets, just because not only does it help them grow individually by the end of the season, it helps our team grow by the end of the season. And most importantly, when our guys leave our program and go to the next level, they can go in so many different principles of play and be ready to play immensely well. I was not always like that, Chris. I was not like that my first few years, but I was forced to do that because we had personnel turnover, right? And when personnel turns over, innovation typically pushes you in a direction that makes you uncomfortable as a coach, but also it challenges you and it excites you just because you have to do something new to try and maintain a certain standard of excellence among within your program. That's a long-winded answer, but that's what we try and do.
Well, first off, this is the place for you to be verbose and to share all this because there's magic in all of what you said. But I want to highlight one thing particularly is what a great explanation about why to play basketball in practice.
Yes.
Right? Your players are going to have more decisions and ultimately you have to play basketball in games. So
Yes.
it connects for you and it connects for them. And that's beautiful. One thing in terms of I wanted to get your thoughts on, I love the philosophy of it's going to be non-linear in terms of your team's development. There's going to be ups and downs. And you also know that you want to play your best basketball at the end of the year. And you frame that
Yes.
beautifully. Do you explain this to your players that
Yes.
in some cases we're not chasing championships in the first month, first week, whatever it may be? And how do you explain it?
Yes, and great point. We're very, it depends on the team. So if you have a veteran team, they know it, right? They know it because they've seen it. They've seen the proof in the pudding. They get it. But like this year, we have a mix. We have some talented guys, but we're bottom heavy. We have three seniors. And we have a lot of underclassmen, and the underclassmen are really good, but they just haven't been through the wars. And so, with that being said, something that we're doing that's unique this year is we're having some of our collegiate basketball players hop on a Zoom with our guys, and we're having them speak to what it is we're talking about. It's not this bald old guy just telling the stories. It's multiple 4-year Division I guys that are talking the story. There's professional guys that are telling the story. There's guys overseas that are taking the time to tell the story. There are college coaches that are taking the time to tell the story. The guys that played in our program. Shoot, we'll have some of our video guys that are now doing graphic design and whatnot for high major programs that played for us. And so they have a unique lens now, literally and figuratively, that they played for us. They're going on, they're filming in practice and they're hearing all this stuff and they're going back and they're sharing it with our guys. And I feel like all of that accelerates it and it keeps it fresh because those guys can offer a different perspective than I can. When I can tell them that a kid went on and he went on and he was prepared, but when you hear it from the horse's mouth and you hear it from the player, especially if the kids know the guys, that gives it life and credence. And so then after they hear the Zoom, then we come back and then we talk. Then they're like, okay, I get it, coach. Not that they didn't believe me. We just have to find ways to be innovative. And one of the best ways to be innovative, especially with kids today, is by using your former players and your network of guys that have left your program to be successful at the next level. Because at the end of the day, all the kids have this. They have the cell phone and they follow those old guys. They see the success that they're going. So there's already a built-in goodwill and credibility and equity in the fact that this guy is coming back to talk to them. They follow him. They know the success the kid had. They know who they are. Shoot, I called one of my players last night and he was on the phone. He clicked over to pick up my phone call and he's on the phone with our starting point guard from 3 years ago. And it's one of those things where when you come across those connections, you know, those connections can accelerate learning if you're sensitive and you observe it. So that's one of the unique ways that we leverage that, you know, and it keeps things fresh. When they hear, hey, before practice, one of the GAs at such and such school is going to hop in on a Zoom and he's going to talk to you about why failure is important. Or he's going to hop on a Zoom and talk to you why our coaching philosophy at Chaminade has helped him be successful both in his 4 years at a Division I school, but now as a GA or on staff in someone's school. These are things that, Chris, you can't pay somebody enough to do that because that adds miles to my words. And so I just think that's important to take advantage of just because in the past, it's not something that coaching in 2010, this wasn't a thing. This wasn't a thing. And it was 15 years ago. Coaching pre-pandemic, this really wasn't a thing. And so it's just really keeping your eyes open and being observant to what it means to really be coaching in 2025, 2026.
The thing that connects with me is since starting basketball immersion in 2014, what I've become more conscious of is selling what I do. Obviously, from a monetary standpoint, it makes sense. But what it's really done is made me a much better coach
Yes.
to not be afraid. And again, I'm not selling them snake oil. I'm just doing a better job at phrasing what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how it helps them better. And to your point, it's even more powerful when it's someone else.
That's right.
And that's the beautiful thing about doing it multiple years is there's multiple people that can do it better than you. Because I imagine you're like me. It's hard to talk about ourselves. It's hard to talk about
Yes.
our
Yes.
success as coaches, but to get someone else to do it helps it a bunch better. So I think that's such an awesome example.
That's right.
For me, I've had this Tatum question I meant to ask you a while ago. And I mean, there's more than Tatum. You've been around so many great players from USA Basketball to your program, Brad Beal, et cetera. For me, one of the questions I wanted to ask someone that coached an elite player like that is not coaching them and how it is to coach them. It's more what is different about coaching the other players around him? Because that obviously is a difference. It's not the same type of team experience in some ways. It's better, and also there's some challenges, aren't there?
There are, but I will tell you this. The key piece to it is the character of the individual. Like, the character changes everything. So when you talk about a guy like Jason, that when I talk like his character is one to where it's like he's an elite basketball talent, and that's obvious. But what people don't, and obviously some people are starting to see it now, and he's at a platform and a level to where people get to know who he is. But back in high school, his character was elite. And so when I tell you that, he was a consummate teammate. He was a great teammate. He was a professional as far as the way he worked then, and he cared about his teammates. Like, it wasn't him being transactional. Like, he was really trying to be transformative here. And with that being said, I just think that the character of the individual matters. And so with him, all of the notoriety that would come his way, and all of it was well deserved, and he should have gotten it all. His teammates didn't feel a certain type of way because of the fact that he was a down-to-earth, high-character guy. He wasn't walking around campus and in practice, nose up, being dismissive to teammates. He wasn't too cool to play hard in practice. He didn't have any of that Hollywood stuff in him. And like he had the right values instilled in him. So when all of the pressures and the privilege I would also throw in there came, his teammates didn't look at him like this. His teammates were like, they were Team Tatum. They were like, man, they were excited for him just because of the fact that he was a good dude and is a high character dude. And so that's the one thing that I'll say. And then the other piece too, and Brad was the same way. And ironically enough, if you look at the time frame of them being at Chaminade at the same time, Brad was a senior when Jason was in our middle school. And so Jason was seeing all that stuff, and Brad was the same way. Brad was his senior year. What people don't know is Brad was a 4.0 student here. Brad had all AP courses his senior year. Brad scored like threes, fours, and fives on his AP test. Brad is brilliant. He really is. And so his second semester, his senior year, after his high school season concluded, he could have mailed it in. He could have mailed it in. He got to school at 6 a.m. to meet with a teacher because he wanted to graduate with a 4.0. And he like that's his reputation around our high school. Yeah, we know they're good basketball players, but like people still talk about their character through today. And Brad graduated almost 15 years ago. Jason graduated almost 10 years ago. You know what I mean? And so the character piece matters. The other piece that I think is very tangible for today's kid is this. Those guys loved basketball. You could stick them in a gym with nine other dudes who are not as good as them. They're competing to win. They love to play basketball because they love to compete and win at a high level. They don't love what basketball can bring them. I feel like today's day and age, a lot of kids, they play basketball, not a lot, but there's more than in the past. A lot of kids play basketball because they love what it brings them. And they're playing for the money. They're playing for the shoes. They're playing for the gear. They're playing for NIL. And I'm not saying all that stuff is bad. I'm just saying there's a priority to it. And if we're talking about longevity, and Chris, you talk to NBA executives and you talk to scouts, their job is becoming increasingly difficult. They're trying to weed through all of that stuff to figure out the competitive level of the kid, the character of the kid. Do they really love the game of basketball? Because they're about to make a significant investment in a kid. And so they want to know, hey, when times get tough, is this the type of kid that is going to be competitive and have the competitive nature to learn from the adversity and rise above it? Or are they going to get swept away by the NBA life? Are they going to be swept away because they got all the money, they got all the fame, they got all the glory, they got all that stuff? Or do they really want to improve and win at the highest level? And so circling back to Tatum and Brad, and shoot, I'll even throw David Lee in there because he graduated from here too. Those guys were like that, man. And what I hope is whoever's listening to this, especially if they're basketball players and maybe not at that level, but they can really get far in the game of basketball. That character and loving the game of basketball and loving the actual blue collar work that it takes to improve at your craft, man, it can get you far away. And you can get farther than guys and girls that are more talented than you that don't do that. And so that's my takeaway, Chris. With those guys, man, they're high character individuals and they love the game of basketball, man. They love the work. They love mastering their craft. They don't get swept away by all the shallow stuff that comes their way. And that's really important to note.
Well, they love basketball. I can hear that from what you're saying. And obviously, I can hear your passion for coaching
Yes.
them as well, which that synergy back and forth is beautiful. And one thing that's really stood out when I've had this chance with the NBA and the EYBL to go to these EYBL Scholastic schools
Yep.
and to be able to visit them and do these practice takeovers and just experience the school, which I had never experienced these type of schools before. One thing that really stands out is the best of them, this kind of relationship between the school's alignment and then the basketball program, the coach. So I wanted to talk to you because you've been at a school for a long time. You know the school very well. Sustaining success requires community and school alignment. So how do you intentionally cultivate relationships with faculty, family, alumni, etc.?
No, that's and first of all, what you said is spot on. I've got a head start here in the fact that I went to Chaminade and I graduated from this place, so I have some embedded goodwill, and I played here. But when you come back as an educator, you have to fight against some of the stereotypes of a basketball coach. Some of the stereotypes of a basketball coach is you don't embrace the educational side of things. And I think the quickest way to stir up dissension or to gain some momentum and trust among faculty and the administration is to make sure you're in alignment with the overarching goals of the school. And obviously that varies from school to school, but for us, the character of the kids matter. The fact that the families and the kids value the overall experience and the educational experience on top of the basketball experience, obviously, is important. And you have to double down and go all in on that experience. And anytime we've had bumps in the road, it can get summed up to maybe not having families that weren't in alignment with what our school is about, which happens from time to time. But I just think that like you said, the schools that do it well, the schools that have sustained success, whatever success is for that institution, but sustained success on the court especially, are schools that don't deviate away from who they are holistically. And that's important.
You mentioned cultivating relation, or I mentioned cultivating relationships, and I know one of the reasons we had to delay the podcast was meeting with alumni.
Yep.
So can you
Yep.
talk about that relationship piece, and maybe some from a high school coach's perspective? Because I feel like college, the best college coaches do this, right? They're a part of campus. They don't consider themselves separate from campus,
Definitely.
and that's easy for you in a sense because you're from the school, but you still got to do the work to be able to cultivate these relationships. So maybe talk about that.
That fabric, even though you don't see it, it's real. And it can give you energy and life to your program. And it can give life and energy to the entire school community. And one of the things that's cool about our school is that alums always come back. And what I mean by that is they'll come back in the middle of the day when you're in class to see you. And one of the things that you don't want to do is be like, no, I really got to finish this lesson. You welcome them, you sit down and you talk, and you gotta keep the lesson moving, but you gotta engage the alum. And all that stuff is fun because the way I look at it, it's two missions of the school happening at the same time. And with that being said, the alums are the guys and for other schools, the girls that come back to the school, come back to support your program. They're the individuals that speak well about your school community. They're the students that come back and they want to serve and support your program in so many different aspects. And with that being said, just because they graduated from your institution doesn't mean that the relationship building, the mentorship, the connection stops there. You have to keep working at that. And again, here's my shameless plug for social media, right? What greater way to keep alums engaged in 2025 and 2026 than birthday shout outs, or when they have their first collegiate game, and we had a player that in his first game, he had 9-4. And so For him, it was a big deal. For us, it was a big deal. So what do? We post it to our story. And so we just have no excuse now with all the access, all the tools at our disposal to really leverage those relationships and not only continue to build them, but build them at a more accelerated rate for the benefit of them, us, the school community, and most importantly, the current players. Because these players are going to graduate. They're going to go on to do great things. We had a player sign his first professional contract deal overseas, and he used one of our graduates who's still playing overseas in France right now from 2016. And it was just a quick phone call. We have another alum that just graduated who just got an opportunity to play in China. And how did he get that connection? He reached out to me. I reached out to one of our alums who's in China, and he patched us to some organizations. Organization saw his film. Boom, they're connected. And Chris, the relationship piece is huge. And I just think that when we talk about how coaching has evolved, I think that this is one of the pieces that gets placed under your umbrella as a coach, and it takes more and more of your bandwidth. And it should, because it's that important.
Love that. That's such a great explanation. You can hear the passion for coaching and passion for your program in your voice as well, which is awesome. Frank, so much amazing stuff you've shared. And again, grateful for my connection with you. And USA Basketball brought us together, and it's been a lot of fun. And I know I've really valued my experience with everyone involved in that program, but you've had some tremendous experiences. So let's hear some of those experiences and maybe how it's helped shape you as a coach at this point in your career.
Yes, so there's all these different basketball environments across America, right? And before I got exposed to USA Basketball, you get used to moving from one space to another and adjusting as needed. But I truly mean this. USA Basketball, the culture, the way they go about everything is basketball heaven. And the reason why I say that is because of the first of all, the servant mindset that they take towards the players and their families is incredible. And that's spearheaded by obviously Sean Ford at the senior level, junior national team director, and Don Showalter. I can't express to you how guard the culture and make sure that it stays at a certain level. And then the reason why I say that too is because you look at the very top with Jim Tooley, the president. He's the type of individual that lets them go and do their thing. And so they go and they have a culture in mind. They find coaches that they feel are good fits for the culture. And when you go in and you connect with these coaches, not only are these coaches like down to earth, humble guys that know their craft and are ready to get to it for the sake of USA Basketball, there's no egos in it. And you're talking about, you look at some of these coaches' resumes, and they've got resumes miles long, but they don't bring that. They bring the expertise from that into USA Basketball, but they don't bring the ego associated with it. They check the ego at the door, and it's about serving the organization. And so you feel that throughout the mini camps, throughout the training camps, everything. And then it filters down to the players because that standard gets set from above. And then it gets executed by the coaches. And then the players, the reason why I say again, it's basketball heaven is because the players really do desire to play the right way because they're playing for the letters on their chest. And there's no ulterior motives. There's no, hey, I got to come get mine, because they know that if they play that way, they're going to stick out in a bad way. And so when the practice plans get formalized and get set, and then practice happens, the players, top players in the country, guys are getting paid, guys that have a ton of offers, guys that are going to be future pros, no questions asked. They want to play USA Basketball. They want to play the right way. They want to throw, we say throw strikes. They want to make sure passes are on time, on target. They want to make sure our ball screen coverages are tight. They want to make sure they're communicating effectively. They want to make sure you go into the gym, they've got banners of our offensive philosophy, our defensive philosophy, or the player DNA and all this stuff. They look up there and they really do, to their best of their ability, try and embody those principles so they can take, so you know what's said is, so we can raise the standard. And when I tell you that culture is second to none, man, Chris, when I leave, I have practice plans. I keep a pen in my pocket. So when I'm hearing people talk, I'm like writing stuff down to my quad on the practice plan because there's so many good takeaways. And so with that being said, just like in all the other camps, there's times we're up late at night talking X's and O's, talking life, talking basketball, talking about how to be better coaches. There is literally no better professional development than USA Basketball. And to that, and I'm just talking about from the coach's standpoint, from the player's standpoint, and how they serve the players and their families, there's no better organization that does it in that capacity. And then they also have the unique standpoint of the fact that they're with the players from the junior national team level all the way through to sometimes their pro levels. When we sit down at the fall mini camp, Sean opens up the conversation talking about the variety of pathways and the people who started young, maybe at the junior national team level, and then are at the senior national team level. And so some of those guys are the Jason Tatums, the Kobe Bryants, the Kevin Durants, where you look at their resumes and their resume is littered with all these USAB events and engagements. And you look at how well it served the greatest who have ever picked up the basketball. And you look at how much of an opportunity is still being paid forward to today's current players. It's exceptional, man. It is really exceptional.
It's absolutely exceptional, and it's wonderful to hear you talk about that. It's awesome to be able to hear you share your knowledge and your passion for the game. And Frank, can't thank you enough for sharing with us. And I know everyone will enjoy this experience of learning from you.
No, Chris, I appreciate you. Thank you for the time. It's always great talking to you and connecting just about basketball and even away from basketball. If I could do anything in the future to help or connect, please do not hesitate to let me know. I'd be happy to do.